think what really helped me get back on my feet was all the things that made me successful as a Marine. And it was the community. It was the environment that I was in, and it was the people that I surrounded myself with.
This is SITREP, the New York City Department of Veterans Services podcast, where we aim to inform and inspire by bringing you the stories of New York City veterans, military service members, their families, and civilian supporters. I'm your host, Gabe Ramos, U.S. Marine Corps veteran and Deputy Press Secretary here at DVS. So on today's episode, we hear from Marine Corps veteran Derek Coy. Derek is an absolute rock star in the veteran and advocacy space. He's used his passion for service at organizations like the ACLU, the Doe Fund, and Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. We'll chat about some of the formative experiences that led him to military service in the first place, and ultimately the decision to pursue college afterwards. You'll hear him talk about making the transition from his hometown in Texas to New York City, and how he considers the Big Apple the best place in the world to be a veteran. Enjoy the show. All right, so we are here with Derek Coy. Derek Coy is the Veterans Health Officer at New York State Foundation. He's a Marine Corps veteran. He's had positions at the Doe Fund, ACLU, IAVA, and most of all, he's just a really good-looking dude and a great dude.
Appreciate that.
I'm really happy to be sitting across from him. I'm really happy to have you here, Derek. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate this.
So let's just kick this off. Just tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll take it from there.
Yeah, man. So originally, I grew up in Texas, right outside of Houston. Followed in my pop's footsteps. He was a Marine. His dad was a Marine. Something I always wanted to do. Ended up enlisting when I was 19. Did 4 years in the Marine Corps, did a year-long pump in Iraq, another year-long pump on the USS Essex, traveling all over Southeast Asia. That was amazing. Got out and I used my, which was still, I think it was like the old Montgomery GI Bill, whatever it was, dating myself here. But whatever.
What year was that?
Like 08, 09, before okay. Like the new one kicked in.
Yeah, yeah, that was so like right before the new one.
Yeah, for sure. So I wrapped up my undergrad at the University of Houston and I had the new post 9/11 GI Bill. After that, or like enough left over. So I moved to New York to go to grad school at City College, study history there, and got really involved in the veteran community, nonprofit community in general, but more specifically the veteran space, and been here for 8 years now, man.
Awesome. So there's a lot there. You kind of fast forwarded through pretty much from birth to yeah. just sitting here. So let's take it back. So your old man was a Marine.
Yep.
And so who else in your family served?
So quite a few people. My dad and his brother, they're a year apart, but they actually joined together.
No kidding.
So they went to boot camp together and all that stuff. So always heard all these really cool stories about them serving. Both my grandfathers, World War II vets, one was a Coastie, the other was Marine Corps as well. So always had that tradition. I actually have my dad's uncle. We just, you know, he's just a Theo to us, but I guess my great uncle. Roy P. Benavides, he received the Medal of Honor in Vietnam, Green Beret, really badass dude. Give that guy a Google. He's pretty amazing. So there's always been kind of, I think what we're learning now statistically, that like warrior cast.
Yep.
If someone, it's kind of like that system that you're kind of raised in. So yeah, quite a few members, a lot of cousins. Cousin of mine joined right after I did.
So my it's very cousins. Much a part of kind of your upbringing, your DNA, would you say?
Yeah,
it was pretty prevalent.
For sure. But so like not like in like a pushy way, though. You know what I mean? It's not like you're going to, you know, graduate high school and then you're going to,
right.
you know, the military in general, let alone the Marine Corps. And it was actually kind of the opposite. My pops was always like, hey, man, like obviously like all of us did this, but like. You should go to school. None of us went to school. I wish that's something I'd want. And of course, you never listen to your parents. You do right. the exact opposite. And so
had he pushed you towards the Marine Corps and the military,
I'd have ran so far away.
Yeah, you would have gone to med school.
Almost guaranteed for sure, man. Whatever the exact opposite of the Marine Corps is, which might be college, I guess.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, probably jarheads. And,
yeah, no, and for sure. Yeah, man. So probably so, but yeah, it was definitely the appeal of kind of like, well, why don't you want me to do this? Like, right. I kind of want to prove and, yeah. you know, so definitely had that influence on me growing up.
So so you enlisted, was it right out of high school? Was it?
No, so I tried. I made an honest effort to like try to listen to my dad's advice. So I was in community college for like 3 semesters. And I mean, in the literal sense that I was doing whatever I needed to like be enrolled, but I was a server. At a Mexican restaurant, I was making good money. So I was like, college. Like, I don't know. I just wasn't very ambitious ever, especially, you know, at that age. And I didn't know what to do. So I thought as long as I just keep 1 foot in college, something will pop up and it'll make sense. So I enlisted when I was 19. I turned 20 in boot camp. So had a little gap there.
So even there, you're one of the older kids in boot camp.
It felt like you wouldn't think that would make that big of a difference, but it definitely, I felt like I was older, almost being 20 when there were people that were like 17,
yeah.
18.
Well, I remember going in, so I enlisted junior year, summer of my junior year before my senior year of high school.
Yeah.
And so all senior year, I knew that, you know, as soon as I got my diploma, I was heading out.
Mm-hmm.
So I graduated in May. In July, I was in Parris Island.
Oh, damn.
And I remember, you know, being 17 or 18 years old and, you know, like the 20, 21 year old, that was like, we looked at them like they were old guys. Like
yeah,
they were old men.
For sure.
Then there was somebody who was like 23 years old. We're like, oh, who's this fucking old
man? Yeah. No, absolutely, man. And yeah, just those few years definitely made me feel that way. And I wouldn't say like gave me an edge or anything, but it definitely gave me a little perspective. Because right. I feel like.
You had a little bit more maturity.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say I was
as
less,
much as you can
I was
have.
Less immature probably is yeah. probably a better way. I wouldn't consider myself mature at that time or even now for that. That's a different story.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely a little different perspective. But so that history, like culture that I grew up in was always there. But I always would like question whether like I had what it took to be a Marine. Like in particular, I thought about maybe one of the other branches, you know, how could I kind of serve? But I didn't feel like I had it in me, man.
Yeah.
I always felt like my dad's like my hero.
Yeah.
So I look up to him and I'm like, man, like I'm not like you. I don't think, you know, I'm going to go to boot camp, they're going to kill me, man. Like,
right.
I'm going to die in boot camp. I'm not even going to make it to the fleet.
Well, because there's so much of, you know, like the prestige and all the aura that's associated with, you know,
definitely.
The few, the proud, being
yeah,
a Marine.
For sure.
And it's very much like it's just this constant questioning. Do I have what it takes? Do I have what it takes?
Definitely.
Do I have, you know, even once you're in boot camp, once you get the EGA, it's still like,
yeah,
I've earned this, but did I really earn
yeah,
it?
It's
very
sure,
much,
man.
Yeah, no, I totally identify with that. I feel like, even when I was in the Marines, after boot camp, after combat training, checking into my first unit,
mm-hmm.
it was very much, I feel like my entire enlistment, my whole mentality was, do I really deserve to wear this uniform?
Yeah.
Do I really deserve to be one of the few, the proud, right?
Yeah, no, for sure, man. I definitely felt that. And I think for me, a lot of people that I have spoken to, it's kind of like a proving ground. Do I have what it takes? Can I see if I can make it? And for me, man, like I wish, you know, it's tough, especially being in New York City, because it's really personal to me. But like, you know, after 9/11 happened, so many people ran to the recruiting office, ran to Ground Zero. They had that visceral response to us being attacked.
Yep.
And I was definitely, you know, I felt that way, but still like question, you know, what can I do?
Right.
Like, I'm not,
yeah,
am I
what is one person?
Yeah,
do?
I'm in
yeah.
Texas. I'm a junior in high school. So I wish I had that, hey, this happened and I wanted to sign up to serve my country. But you know, in reality, man, I joined a runaway.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I was in 19, I was barely going to community college and you couldn't make this up, man. So random. No one saw this coming. My best friend was killed by gun violence.
Wow.
When I was 19. And so this happened, ironically enough, September 11th, 2004.
Oh, geez.
So the first thing I did, you know, was I ran to the recruiting office. I was like, I got to get out of here, man. Like my world just got turned upside down. I don't know what to do. I've always wanted to serve. And I was like, man, you know, I could have been with him. I
right.
should have been with him. That could have been me. What am I doing in my life? And I was like, well, now it's time to do something. You got a second chance. So you always wanted to serve. Like
yeah.
now, you know, do it. So
you had been kicking around that idea. And so was this, would you say kind of like, all right, this is it. Like
it was
you got to get out.
Without a doubt, man, for sure. And it was, and like I said, it wasn't, I wish, you know, it would have been a better story if I was like, I felt like this, I wanted to do it and serve my country. I just wanted to run away. And the Marine Corps was super happy to have me.
Of course.
Midst of two wars.
Yeah.
You know, I had a little bit of college under my belt and I was like, hey man, whatever gets me out of here quicker, I don't care what job, I don't care where you station me. Of course I didn't have any say in that anyways, but, looking back on it, yeah, man. So that happened September 11th, December I was in boot camp, in August I was in Iraq. So
wow.
less than
That's
a year after that. So like it really, you know, I hit the ground running there, man, but I wanted to run away and you probably couldn't
you
have
ran away.
Them, but yeah,
you got away
halfway around the earth, man.
Yeah. Iraq's pretty far from Texas.
A little
was
bit,
Baytown,
man.
Is that it?
Yeah. Baytown, Texas, man. Yeah. So it was a wild ride, but again, like looking back on things, really was able to make the most out of a super tragic situation. And, you know, if I can go back, there's not much I could have changed and, really excited to have been able to do what I did. But yeah, man, it's just so random. Like I said, I wish it was under different circumstances, but
yeah. And
times,
but I feel like, you know, we all, you know, and in one of the other shows I was talking with some folks and we were talking about the different reasons why folks join the military.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether it's out of sheer patriotism, whether it's to get money for college, whether it's to get out of your hometown. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know,
for all the above.
For all the above, right. Yep. You know, for every person that's in the military, everyone probably has their own specific reasons or you know.
For sure.
Ton of reasons why they join. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, you go to a recruiter's office, you enlist, you're off in boot camp, and then you have kind of this narrative that you're telling yourself, this is why I joined, but there's all these other reasons, right? You have mm-hmm. no real way of getting to the bottom of what kind of served as a catalyst, but obviously there was a lot there that motivated you to join. So,
definitely.
I mean, so this time in your life is a pretty formative experience. Obviously, you have your best friend pass away by gunfire. You know, you're about to ship off to war. What's kind of your state of mind? What are you thinking? What's going through your head at this point?
Man, you know, I think because it happened so quickly, it was really just cover down, get to that next movement. So yeah, man, it was really just become a Marine. Yep. Get through boot camp and you'll figure it out from there. And then like you were saying, man, there's always that pressure because you think all I got to do is be a Marine and then I will be respected by all the Marines. And you're right. Like, yeah, good luck with that. So, you know, of course I'm going to, you know, MOS school in Meridian, Mississippi. I'm like, all right, just get through MOS school. Then I'm like, all right, you know, or into the combat training, like get to that next thing. And I get to the fleet and it's like, all right, well, get a deployment under your belt. Right. And it was always chasing that next thing. And in my 4 years, I spent two of them deployed.
And I feel like that's kind of, you know, like a microcosm for life, right? Like we feel like everything, you know, like we set these goals for ourselves, this next milestone. Mm-hmm. Once I achieve this, once I have that, I'll be set. You know, once I get the job, once I get the promotion, once I get the girl, once I get the house, you know, all these other things. Mm-hmm. But it's like, once you get to it, it's like, all right, well now what's next? Like,
yeah, man.
I mean, I feel like that just speaks to like just being a human being and trying to find the next thing.
It does, and what's crazy is that it seems so obvious, but man, that was not the case. No. I really thought, like, I just got to get that one thing, and that's true past the Marine Corps. That's true of, like up until, like, a year and a half ago, man, where it's like, I just need this job, yep. I just need this thing, and really think that, like, external positions or money or your location is really going to kind of make me happy, right. And yeah, long road down that path, until I realized that was not the case.
Right. Chasing all these kind of external things to
oh, absolutely.
To address the inside.
Yep.
So what was your job in the Marine Corps?
I was an aviation supply specialist.
Okay.
Which I like virtually never did, man.
No, of course not. Yeah. You have your job and then you have what you actually end up doing in the military.
Yeah, for sure. Being a young Marine, especially like deployed, was always like doing everything else. Like right when I got to Iraq, I guess it would have been their first elections were being held.
Yep.
So there were a whole bunch of like kind of like a primary and then like the major, like the general election for a whole bunch of different government positions. So like standing a whole bunch of, you know, guard post duty, like for all the elections. Got to travel quite a bit throughout Iraq, which is pretty cool. Drive, fly. That was pretty sweet. But yeah, I did that for a year, man. That like my fleet experience was forward.
Yeah.
Which was nuts.
Yeah. I would assume.
Yeah,
so.
Steep learning curve. But yeah, definitely did quite a bit there. Basically came back and did like all the catch up training that I needed to have done.
Yep.
And then I jumped on a boat for another year. And same thing. It's just like find a place for this guy.
What MEU? You was on MEU, right?
Yeah, 31st, the USS Essex out of Okinawa.
Gosh,
pretty amazing, man.
Yeah, for sure. So at what point did you say, hey, I like this. I like being a Marine, but I don't think I want to make a career out of it. Or was that always your mindset?
Man, you know, it fluctuated so much, man. It's like the first, like, I'd say year or two in the service, all I was thinking was just get back home to Baytown, man. Mm-hmm. Like, do what you got to do, make it home to your family. And I think really because of that year traveling all over Southeast Asia, and I went to like virtually every country, man, you name it, we got really lucky. So I think that exposure to kind of what else is out there kind of fed my curiosity.
Right.
So then it wasn't, all right, well, don't go back to Baytown. Where do you want to go?
Right.
And then I was like, well, the Marine Corps has done an amazing job. And even I wasn't sure about if I wanted to stay in. Really wanted to be a drill instructor. But I think that's what every Marine says until they realize what you have to do.
Yeah, and then like your one buddy who goes off and comes back with his vocal cords shot to hell.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
Yeah, maybe this isn't for me.
Yeah, so I was like, but in theory, I was like, you know, maybe re-enlist, be a drill instructor, do something different. But I think, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but like most decisions, there was a girl and she really wanted to head back to Texas. And I was like, you know, I kind of had a change of heart, but was like madly in love.
Right.
And you know what I mean? So I was like, oh, well, wherever
as,
you go,
as much
I'll
as
go.
You can be at 22, 23.
Oh,
whatever.
For sure, man. So yeah, I was a 22-year-old kid, very much a kid, like in love. And I was like, well, if you want to go back to Houston, I can't really get stationed there. So I guess I'll get out and go back to school. And it just seemed like the right thing to do at the time, but very much on the fence. I could have went either way up until like 4 months before I actually EAS.
So that's perfect kind of segue into your transition then, because essentially 4 months before you decided to separate, so you didn't really have a lot of prep time to say, okay, this is what I'm going to do when I get out, have a job set up, have school prospects and all that. So what was that process like? So you make that decision, all right, I'm going to leave the military. What comes next? And just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think once it became very clear, like, all right, I'm not going to reenlist. So, like, I need to do a little bit more planning. I really got lucky, man, because I joined and then subsequently got out in December. Mm. So, basically, in those 4 months, when I was like, all right, I need to, you know, make something happen, I just applied to a few schools in the Houston area. So, University of Houston hit me back, got accepted there. So I was able to start school in January. So my transition was basically December off,
right?
Moving back to Texas, get my bearings. And then I had done a little bit, like I said, a little bit of school before and a little bit in. So I only needed to do about a year and a half to wrap up. So I was like, well, I just, you know, wrap up my undergrad and then from there I'll figure. So kind of like in the military, just get to that next thing,
right,
just
it.
Get a degree and then you'll figure it out. Yeah, so
just get to this next milestone.
Yeah. So I didn't really have any like bigger picture plans, but I kind of knew, and I was very fortunate that I had like a good support system, my family, friends, I could go back to school and had the, you know, then the Montgomery GI Bill at the time. So I had enough cushion to where I could be a little flexible and just kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
Had it been, you know, if I got out in February or March, I would have had to wait for like that next, you know, fall semester. It could have been a lot worse, but it worked out for me, man. And I just kind of winged it. It's not a good plan, but
not at all. But I feel like that's, I mean, I certainly winged it for about a year when I first got out. And I feel like most folks, because even if they have it set in their mind that, hey, I'm going to do four and out, five and out, whatever it is, you don't really have too much in front of you. You don't really have too much an idea of kind of how to set yourself up for success. I mean, at that age, you're, you know, very early 20s generally, you know, you have all this newfound freedom. You could grow out your hair, you could grow out a beard. You don't have to wake up at five. You don't have to work out anymore. You could eat whatever you want.
For sure.
So you're very much like that freedom is kind of could be counterproductive.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely, man.
So you come back, you're in school in Houston, you ended up getting your bachelor's there.
Yep.
And then at what point did you say, I want to move to New York City?
I think it was kind of when it came to the point to where, all right, I am wrapping up. Now what do I do next? And I look back on it, man, and I think it's very clear. I have this thing where I just love to run away when, you know, things get a little dicey.
Yeah.
And really, I think what happened was when I was getting closer to wrapping up my undergrad, the girl at the time that I was dating, amazing girl, fortunately very good friends to this day. You know, we had all these big plans. We're going to get married. We're going to move to New York. And at that point, I was like, what are we going to do next? And I was like, well, I have that new GI Bill. I get a stipend. I was like, I've been outside of my comfort zone, lived in Japan, like did a lot of traveling. So I was like, I've survived elsewhere outside of Baytown, which I wasn't sure that I could do. So I was like, well, where do I want to go? And I really kicked it around. And New York was always something that I loved from afar, had never been. I just thought like, man, that's where I want to be. I want to give that a shot. And so, you know, definitely on the tail end of wrapping up my undergrad, mental health was in just rapid decline, man. So what happened was I felt really overwhelmed by not knowing what that next step was, not understanding what was happening to me mentally. So I was like, well, time to run away again. Yeah. So my relationship fell apart, ended up moving to New York City by myself. And without a doubt, the first 6 months in the city, hardest 6 months of my life, man. Like really, really tough.
In terms of because you didn't have a support structure here in New York City, you didn't have those kind of those social bonds, or what specifically about
all the above, man. So I didn't know anyone here.
Yeah.
So, but originally I had planned on coming with, you know, my girlfriend, a girl I was going to marry at the time.
Right.
So I kind of knew that I had that. But once that wasn't the case, I came here very much by myself. Didn't know anyone else. And then also, which is, I think, kind of full circle, man, really pressing is something I'm really, focused on addressing. I didn't get paid. My GI Bill payment didn't come through for my first semester.
Oh, wow.
So when I moved here,
you were one of the original GI Bill delay.
Yeah, man. So, blew through my savings just trying to survive in New York. I signed a lease on the apartment that I was going to share with my partner. So I ended up, you know, paying this exorbitant amount of rent, just, you know, bleeding money on a daily basis. And then also trying to like get accustomed to a new city, but then also grad school is completely different. So like really all these brand new things that I was trying to figure out, I was trying to do it on my own.
Yeah.
And man, I was just, you know, struggling, man.
Oh,
it was,
yeah, I can
it
imagine.
Was tough, man.
I mean,
it was
really
rough.
Again, like just looking for that kind of geographical solution to the internal struggle, right? Mm-hmm. That issue that you have inside. So, you know, you're always looking for those external answers, whether it's through a job, through a promotion, through these physical things, or if it's just a geographical switch, right?
Yeah,
as long as I change where I'm at, mm-hmm. you know, that should solve the issue. And then you kind of get settled for a few weeks and then you realize, oh no, you know, all of the stuff that I was feeling, I'm still feeling them. You know, it's not changed because I'm in a different zip code.
Yeah, I know, for sure.
And plus, like you said, like the rhythm of grad school is totally different than mm-hmm. than traditional undergrad. Mm-hmm. And you have all this other stuff going on. You're fresh out of the military. You're looking for your identity. You're not getting paid. So you're having to worry about real practical things. Mm-hmm. Plus, you have these kind of existential questions probably running around your head.
Certainly, man.
So how do you kind of, how'd you get your grounding? How'd you kind of get your footing under you?
I think it sounds so cliche, man, but I think what really helped me get back on my feet was all the things that made me successful as a Marine. And it was the community. It was the environment that I was in, and it was the people that I'd surrounded myself with. So my mom, bless her heart, man, she's just the sweetest lady ever. She, you know, she was married to a Marine. You know, she knows how this is. And when I came home, she knew something was not quite right. But she didn't know how to approach it. And that's something we just struggle with just anywhere outside of the military. We're just talking about mental health in general. So she would always kind of drop these hands. Hey, maybe check out this organization. Check out that organization. Like, mom, like, vets are like crazy homeless people. Like, that's not for me. I'm healthy. Like, I always had this really negative stereotype of a veteran. Like, I never even thought of my dad as a veteran because he had his stuff together.
Yep.
And I always thought that negative perception, like so many other people. I was like, if an actual veteran thinks that, of course. I don't blame a civilian for thinking that.
I mean, growing up, you hit it on the head. Like, my idea of what a veteran was, like, I always thought, like, oh, Vietnam veterans, American, all stuff. Like, in my head, I thought, oh, Vietnam or a veteran in general is somebody who's homeless or somebody's on the street or somebody has issues. Like, I never understood what a veteran was in its actual sense.
Yeah. No, so my mom definitely, you know, mentioned, you know, definitely, like I said, hinted at a few things, my girlfriend at the time. And I took it personally, man. I was like, how dare you? You're not a mental health professional. You're not a veteran. Like, you just assume something's wrong with me. Something was completely wrong with me. But, like, you know what I mean? I was thinking, like, how dare you? You know, I took offense to it. So I shied away from, you know, what was clear, like, shortly after diagnosis, post-traumatic stress, depression, a lot of things that I was dealing with. And it seemed obvious. But one of the things my mom mentioned, hey, there's an organization, IAVA, check them out. They're doing, like, a parade for Veterans Day. And I'm thinking, the last thing I want to do is be around other veterans.
Yep.
Like, they're going to laugh at me and be like, dude, what's wrong with you? Suck it up, Marine. Like, you know, you're supposed to be better than this. And that's why I thought I would be that's how I thought people would respond to me. But for whatever reason, man, I mean, I think that's definitely just because it was a low point in my life. And I thought, you know, I guess I'll go to the vets parade and hang out with these IAVA people and see what they're about. And literally, within not even 5 minutes, I'm there smoking a cigarette. You know, veteran asks for a light. You know, we start talking. And you thought I'd known this guy my entire life.
Yeah.
And clearly he's like, oh, you know, I just moved to New York. I had a tough time transitioning, all these things going on. And I was like, wait a second, like, you too? I was like, that's wild. I found the only other veteran that's struggling. That's crazy. And then I start chatting
This is
with
just me and you here.
Yeah, no, like,
a
what
sea
are
of
the
successful
odds,
folks,
man?
Yeah.
Like, this is crazy. So I talked to a few other vets and you start getting the similar vibes and you hear what they're doing and how they're responding and reacting to things that they're dealing with or friends that they're dealing with. And then I thought, wow, like, I'm not alone, man.
Yeah.
And then I thought, okay, now I'm not alone. Now what do I do about it?
Right.
And then it was really that toe in the water. Well, I started going to more IAVA events and then you're at IAVA and you hear about, you know, the mission continues. And I started hanging out with a lot of other people that had similar experiences. And then I realized, wow, that helped me so much.
Mm.
That's what I want to do. I want to help other veterans and really kind of tear down all that stigma and break down the barriers that prevent so many people, veterans in particular,
people from
accessing, you know, the care that they need. So, it was crazy, man, but it was the veteran community that no doubt got me out of my funk and then really put me on the path that I'm on now.
And so what year was that parade? Do you remember?
That was the 2010.
That's
2010.
You're blowing my mind because I want to say it was 2011. I was in a rut myself, just totally like in a funk, getting it from my girlfriend, getting it from my mom.
Yep.
Like, hey, you know, maybe you should, you know, reach out to this person or maybe you should check this out online. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing a picture of, I think it was the previous year's IAVA parade on just online. It was like around October. I think it was 2011.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing the sweatshirt on the back says, "We've got your back."
Yeah.
And I mean, just that message like stuck out in my head. I was like, we've got your back. We like that. It just hit me right in the chest. I was like, man, that's, God, I feel like I want to be a part of that. How can I be a part of that? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that year I ended up just, you know, how do I become a part of IAVA? So I went online, I volunteered. I was like, hey, I want to go to this parade. So like, yeah, come on down.
Yeah.
So I went to that parade, didn't know anybody. I was scared out of my mind.
Yeah, man.
And like you said, I mean, it, you know, we were down by the Flatiron building. It's a big group of folks. They're all talking. And I just started talking with folks and just like sharing stories, like, yeah, I'm struggling. And I mean, and just having that conversation and everywhere I look, the sweatshirts, we've got your back, we've got your back. And just that theme just kind of stuck into my head. And I mean, that was like, I didn't get help for a couple of years after that, but that was the catalyst that it kind of planted the seed of me just immersing myself in this larger community that I had for the most part avoided since I got out of the, out of the military.
I mean, verbatim, the exact same, man. And I think that's what really kind of help bring that message home that I wasn't alone. Because it was other people telling me their story and it resonated, not me telling them and they're like responding to it. And I remember the first 4 months I was here, man, I was so lonely. Mm. Like, man, bro, I was so lonely. I will never forget this. I'm sitting on the one train going up to City College and this woman was just sitting next to me and like our like arms touched. And I remember thinking like, oh shit, man, like human contact.
Yeah.
That's nice, like, man. And I'm like, connection. Oh man, bro, like that is so sad. But like, that's how lonely I didn't know anyone here. And it was really just a little, you know, sliver of humanity just made me realize, like, oh man, that's really sad, bro. Like I need to like,
yeah, I think something needs to happen here.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So yeah, turning point for sure. But yeah, man, it was definitely, you know, what really,
so that was the kind of catalyst that moved you and said, all right, I really want to get involved in the veteran space and kind of do some more work.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I think, you know, I'm sure this is something that we share as well. It's contagious, man. Once that person impacts you, you realize, damn it, I got to pay it forward now. Yeah. And then it's, you don't get enough of it. So you always want to find out, how can I help more? What can I do? And then that's really what I've been doing these last 8 years, man. Advocacy work, helping, you know, fundraise. Really just trying to find how best I can serve the community that's given me, you know, so much.
Absolutely.
Up into my current role now at the New York State Health Foundation, really just trying to, you know, keep an ear to the ground, talk to the people who are making stuff happen, stay on top of larger trends that are happening nationally and say, hey, how can we do what we did in the military, bring together a diverse group of people, all walks of life, to focus on one mission and no greater cause, man. Really, really love what I do. And it's been an amazing journey.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's, that kind of really perfectly, I think, encapsulates the degree to which, you know, your experiences kind of shape, you know, what you do kind of moving forward. So like you said, that kind of set the stage for you. Like it was contagious, you know, one connection leads to another connection and just leads to, okay, I got to do more.
Yeah.
And it really informs the way that you kind of go out and start connecting with folks.
Definitely.
If you could talk a little bit about what you're doing at New York State Health Foundation and just kind of what a few of your goals and what you're hoping to accomplish there with leveraging, you know, public-private partnerships and just, you know, expanding access to community-based care. Just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, for sure, man. I think, you know, to kind of like sum it up as concisely as possible is we try to be the glue that brings together a lot of these other people that are already doing the work. So we don't want to reinvent the wheel. We don't want to be duplicative of anything. We want to find out what's working in the community and how do we replicate it?
Yep.
And then what needs are not being met? And then how do we invest in organizations that will address those needs? So we're very much a big fan of VA and any other provider that's providing resources to veterans. But we're pretty analytical and we like to really dive into the data and find out how best we can serve the population. So we know that the overwhelming majority of veterans are healthy. They're, you know, just kicking ass in their communities and really don't need anything other than what they already have.
Right.
They like to seek care in their community with their families. And of course, there are, you know, certain veterans that are struggling. So what we try to do is find that blend is how do we support, you know, good quality access to VA, but then also how do we make sure that the community resources are not only there, but also the quality is the same. So we do that a few different ways. And, you know, another organization we kind of share as a kind of like our family, the Headstrong Project.
Yeah, absolutely.
So a good way, I think a good project for us was really looking at what they were able to do in New York City. And that was the place I've been going to therapy now for 5 years. They had a really great model here in New York City, and we said, wow, this is really great. Mm-hmm. But more than two-thirds of New York State's veterans don't live in New York City.
Yep.
So how do we take what's working here and then replicate that? So we awarded them a pretty modest grant, all things considered, to take what they were doing in New York and replicate it in other cities. And then from there, we follow that up to make sure they can cover down in smaller counties. So it's really kind of taking, you know, a pilot program, if you will, that started here in New York City,
yeah,
and say, hey, this is kicking ass, bursting at the seams. We can't keep up.
Right.
How do we replicate this? And that's what we try to do. So that's an example of expanding community options. But then also, you know, we invest in research. The previous point I made is it's good to have access to community care, but how do we make sure it's quality care?
Right.
How do we make sure that they're screening for burn pit, exposure, military sexual trauma, all these things that we're kind of hip to now on a larger health, through a larger health lens,
yep,
but then how do we make it applicable to veterans? So we found out that less than 3% of providers in New York State have the competency to provide care to veterans.
Wow.
So that's unfortunate, but we kind of knew that. Why would you know all these very specific things,
right,
for, you know, 1% of the population? So what we're trying to do now is find out, okay, now we know there's a deficiency. How do we make sure that the providers out there increase their competency? They have a better understanding of how to serve veterans and an understanding that there are unmet needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I harp on this a lot, man, but we look at services, the people who wear uniforms. I dare you to tell me that a caregiver doesn't serve, or a spouse or a family member doesn't serve. But also, if you're a clinician at serving veterans, you're serving.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think the idea is, if we can frame that as if you're providing services to humans, there's a solid chance some of them wore the uniform,
for
and
sure,
they might have some special needs that need to be addressed. So we're trying to increase that competency now. It's something we're focusing on.
That's awesome, man. Well, we're running out of time, but I'm so glad that we were able to chat. One thing that we do at the end of each show is ask the same two questions. So if there's one thing you'd like every New York City veteran or service member to know, what would that be?
I really think learn from others' mistakes.
Yeah.
And here in New York, man, it was kind of a wild shot to come here. Clearly biased. This is the greatest city in the world. I love it so much, man. But this is a damn good place to be a veteran.
Mm.
And I know a lot of people wouldn't assume that. But whether you're here for work, whether you're here for school, whether you need resources, whether you don't, New York City is a great place to be a veteran, man. And I wish I would have known that earlier, because I think I stayed away from a lot of amazing resources, DVS in particular now, amazing municipal investment in the veteran community here. But then that all hands on deck mentality of New York, man.
Yep.
It can be very individualistic. It can be, you know, very competitive. But also there are so many communities here, and it will welcome you if as long as you're willing to be part of a community again.
Absolutely. And what about for the folks who aren't directly connected to the military?
I think to harp on that previous point again, man, I think service is something that we all can do and we all should do.
Mm-hmm.
So really try to make a conscious effort to bridge that divide. You don't have to have served in uniform, but I guarantee you probably one of your grandparents did, or your uncles or aunt or someone else did. And I think really understanding that you have a role to play and you can have an impact on veterans' lives. And I think once you realize that, then more people will seek out the opportunity to make it happen.
Amen, brother. So we'll wrap up now. How can folks get in touch with you? Are you on social media at all?
Yeah, man. I'm on the Twitter.
On
the Twitter.
Yep, yep.
Classic Decoy.
Classic Decoy. At Classic Decoy,
yeah,
on Twitter.
Definitely.
He's got some good tweets out there. He posts,
yeah,
a lot of good stuff.
For sure.
So definitely check him out.
Yeah, stay in touch. And then, yeah, man, thanks for having me. This is
this was awesome. I'm so glad to have you. We'll definitely have you back at some point. And New York State Health Foundation.
Yeah, definitely at nyshealth.org. Check us out. Do some amazing work. Veterans in particular, but across the board. Definitely reach out. There's anything we can work on. Always looking to, you know, hear about new ideas and see how we can help. And glad to be in this fight with you, man.
Cheers.
Salud.